introductory. We are recording. This is Lynn Downey. Today is Tuesday, March 1st, 2016. I am in the Wickenburg Chamber of Commerce speaking with Nadine Champlin and Julia Macias Brooks about their lives in Wickenburg. Thank you both very much.
You're welcome.
And I'd like to start with you, Nadine. Tell me just a little bit about where you were born and a little bit about your folks.
Well, I was born in Litchfield because my mom didn't trust the doctor here in Wickenburg. She said he was a drinking man, and so my brother was born there, and my sister and me. So all three of us were born in Litchfield, but we lived here all our lives. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the name of the doctor who drank too much?
No. Hey, that was 80 years ago.
What were your parents' names?
Manuel and Concepcion Macias.
And were they also originally from Wickenburg?
Yes.
Wow, that goes back really far.
Mm-hmm.
Grandpa was.
Yeah. My mother was born in Litchfield.
No, in Tucson.
Tucson?
Tucson.
Oh, that's right. Then they moved up to Litchfield.
She was four generations in Tucson. And Grandpa was the grandson of the founder of the 6M Ranch.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So her grandfather would have been Ramon and Canuta Macias. Mm-hmm. And he would be my great-great-grandfather.
Do you know what brought them to Wickenburg?
They
came from Mexico.
Yeah.
And at the time it was 1857, Lynn, and there were lots of things going on, and I think that they felt, let's go north. And it was still the territory, so...
And there was mining going on.
Mining and ranching and knowing that they would have the opportunities in another country.
What part of Mexico was your family from?
We can never trace it back. We're stuck on the Macias side. We're on some of the Maldonado side and my mother's side. We can trace it way back. But the Macias side is just kind of stuck. Hmm. Two brothers came north. And they established the 6M Ranch. And one brother headed to Yuma, and Ramon stayed here. And he found a young lady whose mother had come from Guaymas to take a job at the Vulture Mine as a cook. And she was a widower. And so she came with three children, and Canuta Carrasco was the young lady that he met in town. And they married, and they started us.
Wow. That's a long lineage in one small town.
Mm-hmm. There's now seven generations that reside here.
That's amazing. You must be one of the few families that has been here, or if not the only family that's been here that long.
Yes. We're in one of the very early ones that other components of the Hispanic pioneers married into. So, yeah.
The Garcias have been here a long time.
Yes, but not as long as we have. They came later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what are some of your first childhood memories, and how did you feel about Wickenburg? What was it about Wickenburg that you might remember from early on?
Just living where I'm living now was my dad's ranch.
And where is that?
Up the Phoenix Highway.
It's about a mile from down what we now know is downtown.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. Did you have a lot of neighbors, or were you sort of off on your own?
Well, we didn't have a lot of neighbors when we were young, but my dad loved to come to Wickenburg in town, and he'd bring us here and take us to the drugstore to buy ice cream.
And how many siblings did you have? How many brothers and sisters did you have?
One brother and one sister. And my brother has passed away, but my sister lives in Surprise.
Oh, wow. What's her name?
Ersti. Ersteña in Spanish.
So, where did you go to school?
Here in Wickenburg. I started in that little schoolhouse that's by Bash's.
The little red schoolhouse?
Mm-hmm.
Now, was it in a different place? Has it always been there?
It has. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
They brought in the first schoolhouse from Ultramar, mm-hmm. little wooden, white wooden building, and within a few years, they realized they were outgrowing it. So they bonded. They did a bond, and it passed like a few votes. I can't remember the exact, like 3 or 4 votes, and it was over a $2,000 bond to build this little red schoolhouse. And here we have it today.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Was it always called the Garcia Schoolhouse?
For a long time it was, and then it wasn't. Mm-hmm. So like when she went to school, it was. When I went to school, it lost the Garcia name to it. And sadly, you know, the Garcia history of Ignacio was not relayed. And it wasn't until we started again the Wickenburg Hispanic Heritage, Historical Heritage Organization, and then the same with the Fiesta, mm-hmm. to bring all of that back so, you know, people would clearly understand this man's gift to the community was land for church and school and burial.
Exactly. How many students were regularly in your classroom? Do you remember?
Well, maybe when I started first grade, there was maybe 20, but I don't think quite that many. And
yeah, that makes sense. Now, were there, you were a Hispanic family, were there non-Hispanic family children? Was everybody mm-hmm. all in the same class together?
Yeah.
Huh. Was there a sense, do you remember, or Julie, do you know of, it just feels to me as though the Hispanic community has always just been part of the community. There's never been this separateness.
No.
You know, discrimination or anything.
There wasn't until they started to build west of the tracks, and like C4 is before the country club, and so you read some of these deeds today and it will state, you know, no Hispanic, no black, no
Jews.
Yeah, I mean that they were very specific in that, and there were some developments that mm-hmm. you couldn't buy. Now you could work for whoever, you know, purchased a home.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
But no, because you had many of the Hispanic family members in high places, like, you know, the first marshal or second marshal or even a council member early on. So, yeah, when it became wider, I guess, that's when the history of how this community was founded on the Hispanic side was let mm-hmm. go, mm-hmm. you know, not carried forward.
Was that probably maybe after World War II?
I think so.
Yeah,
I do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you speak both Spanish and English at home?
Yes.
But you probably only spoke English at school.
Uh-huh.
Same, even when I was growing. They wanted us to speak English to our grandparents, and it was so funny. Our grandparents would start in Spanish so that we would know, and then, you know, we would know. But then we couldn't speak back to them because they wanted us to speak English. But it was hilarious because they would kind of argue in Spanish and then come back in English. It was hilarious. These little kids watching this dialogue.
Did other families, non-Hispanic families, learn Spanish? I mean, was
in school?
In school?
Yeah,
yeah,
in school.
We had a good teacher, Mrs. Hawkins.
In fact, I took Spanish in high school so that I could learn to write it.
Oh.
Yeah, she was very good. Oh. Helen Hawkins. She did the very first history of Wickenburg Lynn.
I have her book.
Yeah.
That was a really good book. But wasn't that her thesis or
yes.
dissertation or something?
It was.
Wow, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. So you went to the Little Red Schoolhouse until what grade?
second grade. Mm-hmm. They had built a school then. So I went from all my grammar school years in down there, because they built the school where Bashers is now.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen old pictures of the building?
I think so.
It's gorgeous. Yeah. It's gorgeous. And all of that was part of Ignacio Garcia's land that he donated mm-hmm. to the school district. He was trustee of the school district as well. And they did, and it was kind of like a mission style elementary school mm-hmm. with up, you know, lower basement classrooms, as well as four classrooms on the top, all wooden floors, beautifully constructed.
Yeah.
I think that's, I interviewed, train going by. That's okay, we love the train.
I live out across the river, and the train tracks go across, and I hear the trains all the time.
We do.
But not this loud.
Yeah, we just get used to it.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I interviewed Tony Menendez yesterday, and he was talking about those other small buildings, which is where he went. Is that where you went as well, Joyce?
Yes.
Wow. What? And I think he said they were demolished maybe, what, in the 70s?
Yes, they somebody set the main on fire, and it was arson. To my knowledge, they never found who did it. So sadly, it was in late 70s, maybe 76 or so, 78. But it was a beautiful campus.
Wow. I don't think I've seen those pictures.
I think I might have some.
I'd love to see some. Yeah. And then you went to the high school?
Mm-hmm.
And where was that located at that time?
Where is now what?
The elementary school is.
The elementary.
South Tegner Street and South Valentine Street.
Oh, okay.
So it's now the Hacienda Elementary School.
Okay.
But that was Wickenburg High School through the 80s. In fact, it was through early 90s. Because when we moved back, our son graduated from the same high school that his mom and dad did.
Wow. Do you remember how big your graduating class was? How many classmates you had?
Not a whole lot. I think maybe 40.
Probably. And, wow. And when I graduated in 72, we had like 62. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Since the train just went by, did you ever have any family members who worked on the railroad? Since the family's been here for so long.
Mm-hmm. They did. Mm-hmm.
Who
In fact,
was that?
Ersie's husband, Irvin Randolph, worked for Santa Fe for over 40 years.
Yeah.
And during the time that he was stationed here, he had his office where my office is. And when he was transferred out, whether it was Flagstaff or Grand Canyon or Williams or...
It was Flagstaff.
We would board here and ride to wherever they were at.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So the railroad was then a big part of your life as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was later. You know, in the early part of it, the history is that our Ramon Macias, because the original 6M ranch covered 160 acres, which they needed land for highways and they needed land for railroads.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whole property existed where the railroad needed to be and where Highway 60 needed to be. And so he sold portions of the ranch throughout his life, and then his son Francisco, her grandfather, my great grandfather, continued to sell. And where today I have, Auntie has her piece from the original ranch that she lives on.
An acre.
And I have 2 5-acre pieces of the original ranch.
And where is that in relation to town?
So if you head toward Phoenix, mm-hmm. you'll see there's a blue, kind of like a blue commercial, old commercial building on the right-hand side, just beyond Quality Inn.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
And then there's a road that was called Macias Lane, and you would head back toward the river. And that started the northern side of the ranch where her dad, Manuel, received his acreage from his father and built his ranch. Mm-hmm. And throughout, you know, his life, he sold pieces to family members like the Contreras's and also the Millers and the Madrills. And then once he passed away.
Once my mother passed away, my sister sold the rest of it.
Right, right. And to unscrupulous people that you would never think that this land was a beautiful rancho. On my side, sadly, the Macias men died young. And so their widows ended up marrying other people. And some were good and some were not good. Just like California history, you know.
Yeah.
And so pieces started to disappear. Mm-hmm. And my dad and mom got their acreage. The 5 acres that my husband and I live on today, the Garcia family bought it and never did anything with it. And then the Shantz family that I was telling you about, they bought it and they passed away. And when I came here in 88, it was for sale, so it was like meant to happen.
Wow.
And then the other acreage next to us, my great uncle Raymond sold it to the Hirschquitz family, who are tied into the Macias family. And then the balance of the 90 acres was sold by 2 widows of our great uncles, and there's no longer any of that ranch left at all. Mm. And then if you head out of town about a mile and a half, you'll pass the Shell station, and right before Hospitality, there is a little rock house, and that's my husband and I own that 5 acres, and that is the last piece besides the homestead that we live on. But Hospitality used to be part of the ranch. All the land across the highway clear to the railroad, a full 160, and over the years there's 11 acres left, our little pieces.
That's very similar to California history. It's very true.
Yeah.
another question I wanted to ask was about church. Did you go to church here
yes.
in town? And mm-hmm. St. Anthony's? Mm-hmm. Is that where you went? Mm-hmm.
St. Anthony's.
It was very small when I was young, but it's grown a lot.
And again, they had three. This is the third building, you know, third church structure. The first two, one was very small. And our grandfather's side of the family, the Rodriguez side of the family, they used to have masses in one of the aunt's homes because the traveling priest would come from the New Mexican diocese. So it was prior to that, before the first church was built, and it was a smaller church. And then the second church was beautiful. The pictures that I've seen are gorgeous. And then I think this was built in 1954
yeah.
55, the red brick. And that's the church that I went to,
oh.
still go to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, St. Anthony's de Padua.
Mm-hmm. And that, was that a big part of your life? Was it a big part of the whole community?
Yes.
And was it also, again, all of Wickenburg?
No, because we were the oldest church, but then the second to that was the Episcopalian.
Mm-hmm.
No, Presbyterian. The Presbyterian.
Presbyterian
and the Episcopalian. But there were majority of Catholics that resided mm-hmm. here, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wanted to go back to your school days. And do you have any memories of some of your more memorable teachers, and why have they stuck with you?
Mrs. Schaller, well, my first grade teacher that I forgot her name, and then second grade, I had two different teachers.
Yeah.
One was a man, and then he left, and they hired a woman.
What was your favorite subject in school?
Reading.
Good for you.
Still today.
Oh,
yeah.
How about some of your classmates? Who sticks in your mind?
Well, I think they're all gone now. Martin Hyme and
was one of the Streffens? No, that was with Ursino.
Yeah. Carol Miller.
Carol was in your class.
Yeah.
She's lost a lot of in her class.
When I was,
I never thought I'd live to be 80.
We knew you would.
Because the women are tough.
That's right.
Well, on that note, when I was talking to Tony Melendez yesterday, he told me all the crazy things that the boys would do after school and whatever. And so I asked him, what did the girls do? And he didn't really know. So when school was over or when your chores were finished or on the weekends, what did you do for fun in Wickenburg?
Not in town, but where I lived, yeah.
On the ranch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my dad liked to go hunting, and he'd take me with him and just to ride along, and we did a lot of traveling.
Oh, where did you go?
Well, all over the hills of Wickenburg, and then we used to go down to Litchfield Park to see my grandparents. We'd go stay with them.
They were the ranch foreman for La Loma, the Litchfield Ranch.
Oh.
And so that was, you know, it was half a day to get there, just because of the, you know, highway situation.
Yeah.
And with my dad, when Auntie was saying they were born down there, my dad wasn't expected to be born the day that they were in Litchfield.
Oops.
Yeah. And so that's why he was born in Litchfield. Yeah. But they also, they had so many cousins. My grandmother being fourth generation Tucsonian, she had cousins in the Phoenix Valley. So they would go to what we know as the Salt River area and Maldonado Lane.
Yeah,
and
we used to go visit there a lot.
South Phoenix. And then the Macias's had cousins all over. So Jerome and Bisbee and Superior and and then California. The Macias's, the second generation, the ranch could not sustain that second generation. And so with the mines closing, these brothers had to figure out something else. They were, you know, they were teamsters, but, you know, where are you going to get a job now? And the oldest son was Francisco, the guy on that white horse and that four horseman.
Yeah.
So he inherited the ranch, and that's her grandfather, my great-grandfather. The other guys had to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
The girls, they ended up marrying, and many of them worked in early restaurants, but sadly, they also died of early diabetes or heart disease.
Oh.
And so the family was kind of splintered.
Split.
A lot of them went to California.
Yeah.
And we would see our cousins from California maybe once a year, maybe
not.
And Lynn, we did not get reacquainted with these cousins until 10, 12 years ago, only because of Fiesta de Septiembre.
Yeah, they started coming.
And they were just like sponges trying to, you know, soak in all the history of our family and the ranch and us today. And in fact, when I was in California over the weekend at a travel show, there were a couple of them that were texting me and one that was very close to me, but it was like almost midnight. I said, I'm not getting dressed to go meet you. I love you, but I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to. So they traveled all over the state to see family.
So what year would this have been, or what decade would this have been?
Because in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s.
Well, I'm thinking, say, back in the 30s, that would have been a tremendous undertaking to go down to the Salt River Valley.
Her dad, my grandfather, you know, one of the very early things that we learned was where the old Phoenix Highway was. You know, and part of then the new Phoenix Highway, you know, came through the ranch property, and there's still a piece through our property that we own on the close to the hospitality side of it. But you know, hunting, you learned all, where all the roads were, and so you know, he would tell us stories about, you know, heading to Phoenix and taking all day long to get to Phoenix. Because that was the only way to get. There wasn't the major highway that we see today.
Made sure we took a lot of water with us when we drove to Phoenix.
You probably also had to have spare tires and, you know, all of that. Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. Yeah.
My dad had a pickup. He'd put us kids in the back. Fresh air.
Yeah, and a very bumpy ride, I'll bet.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but it was fun.
Yeah.
I'm sure. What about dances? Were there dances? Did you come into town, say, for dances or anything like that? Where were they held?
At Bowman's Barn.
Bowman's Barn was, even at my generation, Bowman's Barn was a beautiful, big barn that Everett Bowman, world champion cowboy, and Maricopa County Sheriff, and so they had great dances. That was, you know, big dance hall.
Where was that?
If you go north, you would see where Rancho Rio is today, the big arena, and just north of that, the barn is still there. It doesn't look like what it used to, of course, and UPS has their distribution center right next to it.
Oh, wow. Well, that must have been a pretty old building.
It was.
Yeah, it was.
The dances stopped, I think it was like the early 80s. And then when I came back here in April 1st of 88, I said, well, why are we not doing anything in the barn anymore? And Jim Corbett and his partners own that property. And he goes, well, I don't know, want to go see it? And so I did. And I said, well, let's have a party. So we ended up having at least two or three dances back in the barn, and people were just, oh my gosh, they were, you know, memories.
Wow. Yeah. So did the town put the dances on, or was it a private organization?
Everett Bowman and his family did, yeah. Oh, and then after Everett died in 71, because my father-in-law died a week after, and they were both champion cowboys. The Erickson family, Roger and his wife, ran them for a while. And then Nelda and Bill did, his niece. And so, yeah, it was great. But also we had dances out at the rodeo grounds. We had dances
at the bars.
All the bars had music at one
live
time.
Live music.
La Cabana, you know, was a true cowboy bar. And the Pemberton family were part of the Echevarria family and, you know, early Basque family. And, I mean, it was a family bar. And you would go with your children and your grandchildren. Bar 7, Rancho Bar 7. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, on the Fiesta side, it was the Grijalvas and the Garcias and the Macias's. And so, you know, everybody would kind of take turns. And with Francisco and even Ramon, they started with a wooden dance floor in the Mesquite Grove, and then it became a cement floor. And there's pictures, old pictures of, you know, 150 people down there, probably a third of the town or half of the town. And they would barbecue, and, you know, people would be part of Roundup, even when I was growing up. So, you know, we'd be in charge of the tortillas with my great-grandmother, or making salsa or whatever it may be. And, I mean, from branding to mountain oyster cooking and, you know, all of that. It was all part of a community coming together for the gathering and then making it a celebration. So you had music, whether it was Roundup, or you had music because it was somebody's birthday, or I can recall being, I don't know, Auntie, I'm sure you were there. I was probably 3 or 4. And it was the Garcias' turn to have a fiesta. And they lived in the Garcia compound, just where the Johnson's lumber is. Mm-hmm. And there were 4 or 5 houses in that area. And the Macias townhouse was where the library is today. And that, so it was their, you know, it was not the townhouse connotation that we know, but it was their in-town house in case the river was flooding and the kids were here at school, they had a place to go.
I can remember being sick and staying there.
And really?
And have my sister and other kids peeking in the window at me. Mm-hmm.
Salt cedar trees in that area. Mm-hmm. And so the music was great, and everybody was dancing and singing and playing some instrument. And Annie Garcia, Anita Garcia, could sing and
dance. She had a beautiful voice.
Oh, just a beautiful voice. But everybody was taking part, and I was young. And so finally, you know, they gathered all the little chickens and said, it's time for bed, but we're going to feed you before you go to bed. And it was Diane and Bill, Jitterbug Garcia, that got all of us together and took us into their home. But she had made fresh corn tortillas and then had goat cheese on them. And then that was our early quesadilla. And she had put salt. That was the first time I had salt that I can recall. And it was so good. I mean, it was just really good, good to go to bed on. And I tell her today, I said, That was a treat right there. And we all slept very good until our parents picked us up at whatever time in the morning that was to go home.
My mom and dad used salt. Mm-hmm. It wasn't once in a while. They salted everything.
Yeah.
And I still can't do without it.
Me neither. I use a little bit. I use a little more pepper nowadays.
Well, I use both, but got to have the salt, bring out the flavor.
Did your mom teach you to cook, you and your sister?
Well, a little bit. She let us cook. We'd scrambled eggs and stuff like that, but the first real cooking that I thought I did was the baking.
She's a great baker.
Oh. What did you bake?
Well, it started with cookies and cupcakes and, you know.
But, of course, we all learned how to make tortillas and tamales.
Oh, so, yeah.
You know, all of that. Mm-hmm. Pot of beans and steak. And
did you have...
My son makes good tamales.
Ooh. Your niece makes good tamales.
Yeah. But you didn't give me any this
year. I didn't make that many this year. That's the problem.
But David did.
David did. It's David's turn.
Oh, God. Did you have livestock? Did you have your own milk and
yeah.
and make your own butter and chickens and eggs and everything?
Yeah, we did. And garden, big garden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What did you grow in the garden?
Oh, all kinds of vegetables.
Potatoes. And squash. And
yeah.
I mean, have carrots and
corn
and
did
lettuce,
you grow chiles.
Oh yes,
peppers.
Mm-hmm. Yes, uh-huh. Yes. We had blackberries and we had trees. You know, apple and pears and peaches and oh, my grandfather, her father, could make the best peach ice cream to die for. Strawberry ice cream, and we'd all take it's the old crank, you know.
Yes.
The old one.
I still have one.
You make the kids do the work.
That's right. Yeah, we did. And
in the shed someplace, I still have a crank.
Wow.
We need to break that out. But we had pigs. You know, we had
chickens,
beef, and chicken, and. And then
turkey,
and we would rabbits and quail and dove. Mm-hmm. You know, we were poor. No, we never knew we were poor because we had everything. We grew everything, and you know, it just passed down from you know, father to son to grandson, granddaughter, and so on.
And you said your father hunted, so I mm-hmm. I guess you
deer.
Got some of the meat.
Oh,
that
yeah,
too.
Deer, yeah. Huh. And the boys
and rabbits.
Too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Finally, I said, I'm not eating a rabbit. I'm done. Done. And when we hunted, we had to skin everything. And when we were the same with, you know, when we were processing our meat, we had to do it. We had to learn how to kill our livestock. And like with pigs, we had to learn how to, you know, do the whole processing. And my sister Debbie, she could not, she was very, you know, kind-hearted. She could not do that. And she would not eat her own animal. So her mother, my grandmother, would go to town and get Debbie her own hamburger. She was not great. He wasn't going to eat the beef. But, wow. Yeah, I mean, we had to learn all of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You've mentioned the river. I know there have been times in history that the Hassayampa has just flooded.
Yeah.
Do you have any memories of big floods or what damage or whatever affected your family?
Well, when it flooded real wide, it washed away some of our land because it was right at the river.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the pastures mm-hmm. were the river. Because when they first came, it was a smaller river, no, and not the width that it is today. Mm-hmm. So part of the ranch had pastures, lower pastures. Well, that went away with the Walnut Grove. That was the first one. And then the course of the last, you know, 100 years, I think 1970 was really the last time that we had any pasture down there.
Yeah.
And we said, you know, that's it.
Wow.
You know, that's it. But, you know, it's the playground, and it's still part of the land that we own. Mm-hmm. It's just the river.
So the river's course was just a part of your life and your
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, my son used to walk to school through the river because he didn't like taking the bus.
And then when we got old enough, I was sharing with Lynn, you know, we'd take the Jeep or the sand buggy mm-hmm. and go across the river and then just park it on the road until we were old enough to actually, you know, we actually had a license
and yeah.
drive to school.
Yeah.
And horseback ride and hike mm-hmm. and, you know, all of that. Float down the Hassayampa in an inner tube mm-hmm. for a while.
So you all learned to ride then?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Wow.
Haven't ridden in years, but I did.
Do you think, did other children your age have the sort of the same upbringing?
I think so.
You know, even if they lived in town, not out of town like you
yeah.
did. But
yeah, because they would come and stay. You know, they would stay at our homes were open. even today, our homes are open to friends and family. But more so, especially with our school friends, whether they were there an hour or they came on weekends and stayed with us or... And the same with, you know, Auntie and my dad and Ursie. The door was open.
Yeah. What about, did you used to go to the rodeos or did you?
Mm-hmm.
What did you
Because
think
my uncle rode in them.
Oh.
Frank, the second Frank Macias. So
yeah.
It was Francisco and then my grandfather was the oldest boy and then Frank was the second oldest boy. And he was champion calf roper and team roper. They didn't call it team roping back then. And he taught many people. He was a natural. And, a lot of great roping went on.
I don't know. Did they do what they call team roping?
It wasn't team roping.
Yeah.
It was...
Because there was just calf roping, but then...
Yeah, I can't remember what it was called right now. There's an old term... But yeah, he won. In fact, one of the stories that I loved from his wife, Mary, when we were getting her to tell stories years ago, she said, we got married in town, because he married late in life. He had so many friends, and it was just kind of maybe destined for him to marry his neighbor, Maria Contreras. And she said they got married, and he was up in Prescott. Because it was over the 4th of July. And so they went to Prescott, and he won, and that was their honeymoon. You won money. Okay. You know, so we always laughed about that.
Although it was the Frontier days. Impressive.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He won money, and that was off to a good start. Wow. He continued to win money.
Wow. Do you have any family stories about Everett Bowman?
No, not really. I knew him and went to his ballroom, but...
Yeah, Everett, you know, he traveled a lot. He worked at the guest ranches, like the Flying E and, mm-hmm. and I think Kale Bar, but with his, you know, with his professional rodeo career, he traveled a lot in and out of this area. My father-in-law, Dale Brooks, he and Everett were good friends, and they shared leadership roles throughout the RCA and the Arizona Rodeo Association and so on, but don't have a lot of memories.
Does your father-in-law, has he ever told any stories about sort of what he was like as a man, what his personality was like?
Well, sadly, we lost him too early in life. We lost him in 71.
The same.
Yeah.
Like a week later, right?
Week later, yeah. And I don't think they, you know, Art hasn't, you know, said anything about, you know, the relationship with Everett and his dad.
I don't think men told stories like that.
Yeah.
I think it was just, we're in town, we're doing right now.
And Art's dad was a bulldogger. And I'm guessing that Everett, because Everett was also a bulldogger as well as a calf roper and a team roper. And I'm guessing their relationship, just what Art and I have talked about, is potentially Everett maybe showed him some techniques. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, mm-hmm. you know, on the bulldogging side.
Yeah. So what did you do after high school graduation?
I went to work.
Where did you work?
I worked at Safeway for 25 years.
Wow. And that was when it was here in town, right?
Yeah. I started there, and then they made it bigger, and I don't know. I worked, like I said, 25 years and retired.
But she also was a homemaker.
She worked
hard with that and took care of her family and her little nieces and nephews when she needed to. Mm-hmm. The one thing that I loved with, and she's also a great seamstress. And so when we were little kids, we didn't get Barbie dolls. We got Tammy dolls.
So did I. Mm-hmm.
And so Aunt Nay outfitted our dolls with custom clothing.
Wow.
I mean, they were fancy. Of course, there were some had pants and some had the suits and, you know, the ticking on it. It's like my sister, I think, still has all of that, but... we were spoiled rotten with that side. Yeah, but the Tammy doll was upscale.
Wow. I don't sew anymore. I have a sewing machine, but only for repairs.
When did you get married?
Was it 55?
Yeah.
Was it May of 55?
Mm-hmm.
How did you meet your husband?
I met him, he was with a friend of mine in front of the theater.
How about that? Ooh. He was a dashing man. Ooh. He always reminded me of Johnny Carson in his stature and his outgoing nature. And he was just
He was the host.
He was a host.
I don't know how many parties we had up at our place. He built a great big patio so we could. And I've got now tables and chairs all over there.
He was. He was a host and just a really great man.
What was his name?
Bruce Champlin.
Bruce Nelson Champlin.
Bruce Nelson Champlin.
What was his story?
What was his story?
He moved here with with his parents from Detroit.
Wow. That's quite a change. You know?
Yeah.
Why did they come here?
They got tired of the cold and the snow and
Wickenburg, Arizona.
Yeah. Do you know how they chose Wickenburg?
No, I really don't. I think they just wanted to find a warmer place.
I think sometimes people, I've heard this story too, people will just drive around Arizona and then they'll find their way here.
It happens today.
Yeah.
I mean, we were talking to some friends over the weekend that did that very same thing. One grew up in Texas, one grew up in Taiwan. They had their professional careers over with in the military, and they were done with Washington, D.C. And they thought, Texas, New Mexico, or Arizona. And they got to Wickenburg, they walked in our office, and we started talking. And within 5 days, they had purchased 2 pieces of property, and they lived here for 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I think that happens more than we realize.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the reasons we're doing this oral history project, is because there is something so special about this town. I was telling Julie when I talked to Tony yesterday, he said growing up, Wickenburg was his Disneyland. And so that's what we're trying to, you know, to get. We're trying to get to that core of what is it about this place that draws people. And you think of so many families here have been here, like yours, for generation after generation after generation. What is it?
You know what I think it is, Lynn? I thought about this for years, and people ask me the same question. It's serene. You look at this little Hacienda Valley, and you see these mountains that are just serene, and you can see forever. It is just a beautiful, beautiful desert, and the way we live in and use, you know, our desert, whether it's just hiking or horseback riding or jeeping or just, you know, out walking, I think that our pioneers saw the same thing. And our Indian tribes saw the same thing. Because this piece of the Hacienda was not the marauding Indians. They were the nicer Indians. Her dad and grandfathers told us that they traded with the Indians. And they were very accommodating to each other.
So the Yavapai were still...
You know, I had
wow.
Someone do some landscaping for me.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, there's been Indians here.
Wow.
He felt it, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. They had to, because on both sides of the river, it would just made more sense for them to get high up and have their And I really think that, you know, some of the lower parts of the main ranch near the spring that was there, they had to come there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had to come for water all the time. And on some of our property, you can dig down 10 feet and there's water.
Wow.
And it's good water. It's sweet water.
Huh.
It's great water.
So were the Yavapai that your family traded with, did they live in town or did they live outside of the area?
They lived out by the ranch, so it would be where what you see today, where Turtleback Mountain is, and Wickenburg Peak is, and the preserve along that area.
What years would that have been? Do you know?
Probably had to be in the 60s, 1860s, 70s, 80s, 90s.
Do you know if there were any Yavapai families who lived in the region, say, when you were young? Do you remember any talk about, you know, here's some of our Indian neighbors?
No.
I don't think so either.
Mm-hmm. I think once they started relocating, you know, they just left with relocation. I had my best friend was Indian, but he was Navajo, and they were tied to the railroad.
Mm-hmm.
But the natural Yavapai did not stay here. Prescott, I think they meet toward Prescott or then toward what we now know, McDowell area, that Yavapai side of it.
So there were other Indian families here in town?
Uh-huh.
So tell me about your Navajo friend.
The Charlie family came from the Navajo Indian Reservation, and there were other families that were part of the railroad crew, and they had to the north of Yavapai and Washington Street, they had a complex for their workers to live. And the Charlies had, I think there were five five kids, and Richard was my age. And we bonded like this when we were 4 or 5 years old, because I would come to town and stay at the townhouse with one of our cousins and, you know, just kind of enjoy the town, the parks and stuff, the swimming pool and so on. And we met, and Richard had a little trike, and I convinced my mother that I could bring my trike. And so the old post office was across from where Town Hall is today, and it was kind of like a steep little hill, yeah. So we could ride from like Tegner Street going down that hill and toward where the library is today, where the townhouse was today. And so Richard and I were lifelong friends. Our birthdays were a day apart, and sadly we lost him the summer of our senior year in a horrible accident.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But he was just a great guy, and his parents were. And that was one of the first things when, you know, you're young and a death like that occurs, and it's a different heritage. So we buried Richard, and we buried Richard's possessions in an Indian blanket in the cemetery. And I mean, it was just a time that was just so, you know, acute for all of us here. It was a tragedy that all of us felt. And we had a Mormon bishop that brought us all together. It wasn't the Catholic priest, it was a Mormon bishop. And he had 70, you know, high school kids, primarily juniors and seniors, that he consoled and talked to and about this tragedy and this traffic accident and, you know, what it meant. And today, even today, I'll see Tom Jones and tell him, you brought this community of youth together when we needed you the most. Where we could have lost our faith and anything and everything, and it was him that brought us together. But Richard was he was just a terrific young man.
Is the family still in town?
Wilford is retired. He went to work on the Indian reservation on the east side of Phoenix, and he just retired. He's my sister's age, so he's 2 or 3 years younger. But the rest of the family, no, they went after the elder Charlie passed away. They buried him here, and the rest of the family moved back to other family members.
Oh, that's so sad. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
it's hard to lose a childhood friend.
Yes,
it's tough.
Yeah, I've lost a lot of them, sadly, and you know, for a variety of different reasons, but. I mean, yeah, it hits you very early. And it's just like growing up, I can remember, and I'm sure Auntie feels the same way, we had so many relatives that there were funerals once a month then. And when you were young, you went to the rosary, and you went then to the funeral.
Yeah.
And you went to say goodbye to them in the casket. And I think I finally rebelled. I mean, seriously, when I was a senior, and her grandmother, my great-grandmother, Rita, died in Phoenix. And I wanted to remember her the last time that we said goodbye, and when she lived with Grandma. Mm-hmm. And she had beautiful, long, silver hair, you know, and she would only speak to you in Spanish. You'd say prayers in Spanish. And I wanted to remember her like that. And so finally I said, you know what, I'm not going. Yes, you are going. No, I'm not going. I am not going to this funeral. And my other cousin, Danny Franklin, felt the same way. And I know she's buried, you know. Yeah. I know where she's at. I've had friends take a picture of her headstone. You know? But I could not say goodbye that way.
Yeah.
I wanted it done the way I wanted it.
I agree.
Yeah.
I want to go way further back in history. I know we're bouncing around a lot. I know you have a family history with the Vulture Mine.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any family stories about the mine? And about, you've told a couple, but is there anything else?
No, I remember riding out there with my father, but, you know, I really...
What did you think of it when you were out there?
That it was pretty neat.
Did it have a lot of, still had a lot of the buildings out there, I imagine?
Well, a few.
Mm-hmm.
I I think the last time I was out there with Bruce, most of them had fallen down.
You were with me and Debbie, because Deb had never been out there.
I had been out there with Bruce, though, yeah, too.
But this was about 10 years ago we were out there, and they had not. Yeah. And that's part of the sadness, is over these years, there wasn't anything done for preservation. And over the course of probably the first 50 years after the mine closed, you know, good thinking Boy Scouts did what they did at the cemetery without, you know, keeping names, you know, or the old crosses that had names. And it's like, oh my God. You know, so who knows? There, you know, the one grave that's out there is a relation to us, on the Casada side. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when the mines stopped, you know, people went to work for other mines. Baghdad.
Yeah.
Your dad went to Baghdad and went to Ray and Superior and Mammoth and other places until they realized, you know, mining is not good for me or my family. Mm-hmm. And then it was, you know, they all grew up with some type of skill. Primarily block work and concrete and you know, building of homes and so on, and highways. Mm-hmm. They were involved in early Arizona highways from Uncle Frank to Grandpa to my dad. So they built a lot of highways, mm-hmm. and they could use their hands and use their knowledge and skills. Like, my dad was a cat skinner, and he was taught by his Uncle Raymond, who had one leg and could run a cat or blade or mm-hmm. drive a Jeep or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that was their, how they were employed, mm-hmm. when the ranch was, you know, when you could not be supported by the ranch mm-hmm. any longer.
That seems to be sort of Wickenburg's history, mm-hmm. is that there have been, Wickenburg isn't just about one kind of work or one mm-hmm. kind of person. So if ranching doesn't work, if you've got those skills, and especially as Arizona was becoming a state and being built up, Wickenburg could link itself through highways or all these other mining, but it never lost its own identity. Mm-hmm. That's what I find fascinating. And if your family has been here a long time and has all those skills, they don't have to leave.
That's right. Yeah. And that's why we're still here.
Yeah.
Because it passed on to the next generation. Her son and my brothers, they all have those skills. Now, when construction started to, you know, head down south, where it wasn't bringing in the money that you needed to live or even to own your own business in construction, they did other things. Mm-hmm. You know, my brother Mike is the oldest of the brothers, and he went into Department of Public Safety, Arizona Highway Patrol, and he retired 28 years after that. But he still maintained his construction ties, so if he chose to do block work, he could be picked up by one of his friends who owned the company. And Mike still does that even 3 years after his retirement.
I can remember the last job I saw my dad at was when they built the overpass.
Mm-hmm. Really? Mm-hmm. Wow.
And when, you know, we have old pictures of the town coming together and receiving this locomotive, the 761. And the Santa Fe gave it to the chamber, and, you know, the chamber didn't have an office. I mean, we kind of were like gypsies. And the full community had to lay track down to move this train to where, again, Stone Park is next to where our townhouse was and where the town hall was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everybody was involved in that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what was it like for you to lose that townhouse and lose that childhood identity as Wickenburg became more modern? How did that feel?
Well, I don't really remember the townhouse very much, except, like I said, I was sick and kids would come by the window and wave at me.
Do you remember, Auntie, though, your cousin Elsie inherited that?
Yeah.
Then she lived there.
Yeah, for a long time.
The early 60s. And then, not knowing if she sold it to the town or if taxes were not paid and the town picked it up. That's still kind of cloudy on and how that went. And then the Hershkowitzes had a house near them, and I can't remember the other
next
family.
Door.
And so all of that, how that was picked up by the town fathers, I don't know, Lynn. I've never really wanted to go and see what the deeds look like, how that was picked up. But the library was built, that library was built like in 68 or 69, something like that. Hmm. Maybe early 70. But that loss, the greater loss was the homestead when, I hadn't seen my grandfather cry until then. And that was really tough because it was his nephew's widow that had remarried again, and supposedly remarried an electrician, and he was rewiring the homestead, and oh my God, it caught on fire and burned down. So here we're at the property where I live today, and we're watching the homestead burn down. So this two-story hacienda, wooden hacienda that he was born in, and is gone in a minute. That hurt more than anything else. And then the second piece was what we see today with what my aunt's been left with after, mm-hmm. you know, after her sister selling the rest mm-hmm. of the property. Yeah. So,
well,
you have tragedies and you have, you know, great things, and those are all part of our memories. But you can't let them eat you up so much that you know you lose your
well. I found a box. I had forgotten where it was. And in it, I have a $2 metal piece.
Uh-huh.
Someone, I don't know, I worked with, bought some, and he gave me one.
How about that?
Huh.
So $2 silver dollar?
Well, yeah, I guess it was silver when I got it, but it's kind of yellowed now.
We'll have to check that one out.
Yeah, bring out the silver polish.
Yeah, see what it looks like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you've seen a lot of changes in Wickenburg in your lifetime. Does it still feel like Wickenburg? Does it still feel like your Wickenburg here?
Yeah.
Oh, good. What about you, Julie?
It does. I mean, I could always, wherever I was living, when I would come down the highway and I hit like San Domingo, where you have, you know, you're coming into town. You're coming into town.
Yeah.
You know, you just have that feeling. And with our family, I mean, we had ranches besides the main ranch. You know, the uncles leased other lands. So, you know, whether it was heading off San Domingo and heading, you know, east, that was, you know, post home, or the riverside, or, you know, beyond. It was just knowing you were coming home. Yeah, it still feels that way. And we're lucky to live on the land that, you know, our forefathers came.
Well, that's the story I wanted.
Well, my dad deeded me that acre so that I could live close to my mom and take her to town, because he would work out of town and she liked to go shopping.
And she didn't drive, which is a whole nother story.
Oh, she started it alone until she ran over a gate.
Yeah. That was it. My dad was young and said, "You're driving." Yeah, it was hilarious.
Well, is there anything else that I haven't asked you about that you'd like to mention about Wickenburg or about your life here?
Well, I've enjoyed my life here, as you know. And like I said, I lost my husband 10 years ago, but he liked Wickenburg too, and we lived here all that time. Had a lot of different jobs, worked for the highway department and the hospital. That's where he retired from. He was a buyer for the hospital.
Oh.
And they were golfers and
yeah.
dancers. They were great dancers.
And he had one salesman that would come, and he'd bring him a cup. Mm-hmm. Every time he came, a different kind of cup. I still have quite a few of them. He brought him.
Yes,
but some of them, I had too many cups. So I put dirt in them and put plastic flowers and put them out on my patio.
That works for me.
Mm-hmm. Get them out there.
Yeah. What about you, Julie?
I think so. Anything? Yeah, I think that you probably have an oral history take from previous times. We had Carolina Macias Hirschwitz was interviewed by Dennis Freeman, and there's some great stories on that side. And I loved when when they were able to write a Grant Lynn and do an actual pageant.
Do you still have a picture that she drew?
Yeah, that she
painted. Yeah, I got a big one.
Yeah, it was just really wonderfully done, and the history behind that, and they still, I believe, still own the videotape. If they would find it and reissue it, I really think that people would buy it, especially during the fiesta.
That was in the early 90s, is that?
Yeah, it was.
I think I've seen it.
It's a great tape. And I found my copy. I have it in my little office at the house. Mm-hmm. But that's the kind of history that needs to be taught in school so that our children really know the community that they live in, because mm-hmm. that's not being done. And I would hope that, you know, the museum would make every effort to do that. Mm.
They don't teach much about Wickenburg history in school?
Mm-mm.
Huh.
No.
It's probably all state-mandated curriculum,
yeah.
I imagine.
Yeah.
Huh. Oh, I'll look into that. I'll see what they got.
Okay. I need to use your bathroom.
Okay. Well, thank you, Leah.
Oh, thank you.